Welcome to the Side Action Podcast, the sports gambling show that covers everything in the world of sports betting from A through Z. We'll cover the four major sports, as well as anything and everything in between worth some action, and we'll increase the size of your bankroll. And here we go.
All right, welcome to the Side Action Podcast, episode 11. This is Jim Weglars, a.k.a. Wegs. You can follow me at Wegspool on Twitter.
And this is Steve Roberts, a.k.a. Action. You can follow me on Twitter at 31SRoberts.
You can follow us at Side Action Pod. Get all of our picks, especially Action's Day of Picks. So how was your weekend, Steve?
Fantastic. I crushed the books on Saturday to the tune of many, many units. I gave a little bit back on Sunday in the NFL, but overall, a very profitable weekend. How about you?
Yeah, I had a good weekend. I was 4-1 as well. I had a good weekend. Been doing good in the NFL this time, just kind of limiting my exposure. And I know you were rocking and rolling. We were at Rinaldi's this weekend celebrating the end of year Shockers party, and you were showing off all those units.
Yeah, we saw all the 2:30 afternoon games, and there was some good football going on. Michigan looked fantastic. West Virginia was an exciting game as well. Mm-hmm. Good time with the football team, and now it's time to really focus in on our gambling.
That's right. We got to focus on gambling. No more playing on the field. Let's just make some money, make some units. So speaking of units, the duffel bag better, our favorite guy to follow. How did he do this weekend, Action?
Well, I saw that he had one big parlay that he won early on with Toledo in the Maction midweek game, and then Clemson for $50K.
Nice.
Paid $150, but then he gave it all back over the weekend. He had Minnesota against Illinois. Ouch.
Yeah.
And a couple of other big losses with San Diego State. I think I read six figures on a straight up bet, and then another $50K with a San Diego State parlay.
Yeah, he was all over the Aztecs for some reason, and they did not play well. So, well, hey, when he likes his teams, he goes all in. I got to give him some credit for that.
Yeah, no doubt about it. It's definitely hard to lose to Illinois, though. I'm not sure how that happened.
Yeah, I don't know either. Lovie Smith, that beard. All right, well, let's review the whole podcast here. We'll have a legislative update. We'll review our head-to-head section, which a little preview. Action's coming back. We'll talk about the takeaways from the NFL. And then we'll jump into our mailbag. Looks like we have a couple of questions this week. We'll go over college football recap and look ahead, and then a review of the S&P and everything like that. Of course, we're going to look at our spots in that section, and then we'll jump into the NFL, review our statistics, some injuries, and then our key spots for that. We'll do our head-to-head in college and pro, and then both of us get really excited about this. It's college basketball time starting tonight. We'll do our college hoops preview. Anything?
I'm going to have a hard time focusing on this recording because we got the college basketball game on in the background here, but I'll do it for the listeners.
Yeah, exactly. Stay focused, Action. Stay focused. But yeah, some great games tonight. All right. Well, what about this legislative update? Looks like you got something. Maybe there was some, you know, it's voting day when we're taping this. I did my voting. I hope you did yours.
Yeah, I hit the election polling place this morning. I had to wait 45 minutes, but I stuck it out and got my votes in.
Attaboy. So it looks like that there was Amendment 3 in Florida on the ballot today. You want to outline that?
Yeah, I thought this was very interesting. I saw a headline pop up that there's an amendment on the ballot in Florida this morning. The amendment would require that any future changes to gambling in the state of Florida be done exclusively by ballot and the voters, and basically taking the discretion out of the hands of their state legislature, which I thought was very interesting. It's kind of an age-old debate about powerful government versus non-powerful. And there are some big names that are lining up in support of this amendment to basically keep the status quo and, or excuse me, get rid of the status quo and allow the voters to handle these decisions. And Disney, I thought, was very interesting to see that, considering that they own ESPN as well. And they would stand to profit from any advancement in gambling, sports gambling in Florida.
No doubt.
The Seminole tribe was in there as well, and I think that they are in favor of keeping their stranglehold on gambling within the state.
Okay, I gotcha. Well, that makes sense. I mean, if you're giving it in the hands of the voters versus some politician that thinks they know better, you know, some, okay, the paternalistic kind of view of that we know better than you, you guys can't handle yourself in gambling, I think that's going to pass.
I'm very interested to see what happens. Now, it does require a 60% majority for the amendment to get passed, though. So.
Okay. More than a majority, then. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, that's good information. We'll see if something similar pops up in Illinois or other states as we go forward. Well, let's jump into the recap here. We've got, yes, I'm leading 22-16-1, but I remember I had a much larger lead before. The first game was Georgia at Kentucky. I was getting 9.5 points. That wasn't enough because Georgia took Kentucky to the woodshed on that one, didn't they?
Yeah, the final score was 34-17 Georgia, and that really wasn't indicative of the beating that they gave Kentucky. No. They had held Benny Snell in check, and as I expected, Kentucky really couldn't do much more on offense. Georgia coasted to a comfortable win there.
It was a little, we'll talk about the other big game. It was kind of similar to the other game. The defensive team just couldn't keep up with the better offensive team in that one. In the second game, this is the one I finally did, and it was a total backdoor cover. Stanford at Washington. Washington was favored by 10 points. I saw this score early. Stanford was getting blitzed, but somehow in the second half, they gave up a bunch of points, and Washington only won 27-23. Thank goodness, because I would have gone over for the weekend.
Yeah, as we were leaving Rinaldi's, I looked at the score, and it was 21-0 at halftime, and I had chalked up my 2-0 day. And went home and watched some other games, and I woke up the next morning to see that Washington gave up that lead in the second half. I guess KJ Costello got hot and led Stanford back with a few touchdown passes, but ultimately Washington held them on for a 27-23 win, and you did pick up a cover there.
Yoo-hoo! In the NFL games, it was more of the same for you. Pittsburgh at Baltimore, we talked about this game. It was kind of a do-or-die game for both teams. Baltimore was favored by 3 points. Well, guess what? The Steelers pretty much led this whole game. They won 23-16, and I don't even think it was that close. The Steelers now, of course, they didn't get swept by Baltimore. Dropped Baltimore for the third straight loss, and they're really in control of that division.
Yeah, I heard some reports that John Harbaugh might be on the hot seat now. I guess they even asked him about it in the post-game presser, but you also have to ask, what's going on with Joe Flacco?
Yeah,
he looked
terrible,
and he has all season. Lamar Jackson doesn't look any better, so the Ravens are in kind of trouble.
Yeah, they're on the downslide. They had an early start, played well. They still look okay in my index for some reason, but they can't make the big plays, and I agree. Joe Flacco's the problem. I mean, he's just not able to connect, and he's also immobile, but we'll see what happens going forward. The last game was probably the game of the day, the Rams at New Orleans. New Orleans, it was interesting, a lot of movement in this game.
Yeah.
When we picked the game, New Orleans was a 1.5 point favorite. I think the Rams went off at a 2-point favorite when the game went off. And that was just an incredible first half. The Saints actually scored every time they had the ball. They were doing everything they could to the Rams. The Rams did roar back in the third quarter, early fourth, to tie the game at 35 all. But New Orleans did what they did, and they hit a big pass late. And did you see the flip phone?
I saw the flip phone, old throwback to Joe Horn in the day. It kind of reminded me of a game of beer pong where two drunk guys are really hot and they're just nailing shots back and forth. It was Drew Brees scoring a touchdown, and then Jared Goff would come down the other way and match them score for score. It was incredible TV and a great football game. I really enjoyed it.
One of the things that I noted in this game, basically that the way I saw the Rams doing it, they were trying to put Marcus Peters on Michael Thomas man for man the whole game, and Thomas just lit him up. I mean, 211 yards, a touchdown. He had that big touchdown with the flip phone. I don't know why they were doing that. I mean, I guess they had confidence in Peters, but after that first half when he just was lighting him up, why didn't they just start giving him safety help? But the other thing, though, I will note that the Saints they're number one against the run now in the league, and they limited Gurley to 68 yards rushing, which is incredible. I mean, of course, Kamara chipped in 3 touchdowns.
I think that was a part of my handicap, too. The Saints' defense has definitely been looking better, and that rush defense held Gurley in check. Also, I wanted to note, as you mentioned, the Michael Thomas matchup. I read that Coach Payton saw that they were going to have Peters travel with Thomas all day, and he and Drew Brees decided that they liked that matchup a lot.
It obviously worked out. I wonder if these teams play in the playoffs, if they're going to, A, find do that again, with maybe Tlaib when he's healthy, or decide, hey, maybe we shouldn't do that. Maybe we shouldn't give them a free square every time they get the ball. So
that's a really good point. If Tlaib comes back healthy, it could be a little bit different of an outcome.
Exactly.
Although now New Orleans has the driver's seat for that home field advantage, which will be huge going into the playoffs.
They do. Playing in that dome is a lot different than playing on the road, especially on grass too. All right, well, let's jump into the takeaways for the week. That kind of segues right in. What I was going to note for the NFL in general was Vegas kind of took a beating this weekend because all the big favorites came in. You had Kansas City going off against Cleveland. The Bears destroyed Buffalo. Minnesota killed Detroit. Carolina destroyed Tampa. So I heard when I was listening to VSiN this week that a ton of parlay cards came in. So they lost a lot of money in Vegas.
Yeah, even Pittsburgh as an underdog was an extremely high public side, and that killed the books as well.
Mm-hmm. So with that said, going in, we also had the Patriots. The Patriots faced off against the Packers. This was a lot of marketing and billing for this game. I don't know if you watched the game, but, oh, who's better? And they even had Jordan out there talking about, oh, who's better? To me, it's not even a question. Tom Brady's the best. He's won the five titles, but I get that Rodgers has maybe more skills at this point in his life, but what do you think about all that action?
I think that everyone has quickly forgotten about Peyton Manning,
a
quarterback near and dear to my heart.
True, of course.
Of course, Aaron Rodgers is awesome, but I agree with you, Tom Brady, you can't answer championships, and he has five of them, unlikely to be matched by anyone in the future.
Exactly. Well, that game was, when we first looked at it, it was a 6.5-point number. I actually was liking the pack at that time. I think it floated down to like 4.5 or something, mm-hmm. closer to game time. One thing I've noted is if it comes down to coaching, and McCarthy's garbage, and he's just the worst.
He is bad.
Belichick, it was clear that they had the Packers' plays already written out. I mean, they were there before the plays even were run. The only reason why the Packers scored any points in the 31-17 loss was because Rodgers is exceptional and can throw the ball exactly where he needs to. Otherwise, it was like everybody was covered like a blanket.
I will say, though, at one point in the late third quarter, and I think it was the first play of the fourth quarter, mm-hmm. tied game, the Packers are driving outside the red zone, and Aaron Jones had a huge fumble.
Terrible fumble.
And that turned the momentum of the game. As soon as that happened, the Patriots took control and never gave it up again.
You're right.
So if Packers go in there and score a touchdown, it could have been a different outcome.
I think you're right. It definitely snowballed after that. And if you also noticed that Cordarrelle Patterson was a good running back in that game.
Yeah, incredible. He was running between the tackles like a man possessed.
It was a weird game. Anyway, that showdown was won. Another one of the notes that I wanted to put in was the Chargers, your Chargers. I know you said it was my Chargers. Your Chargers. There's the one that picked them early in the season for a lot of good news. They went on the road to Seattle. They won a big game, 25-17. They were a road dog in the game, 1.5 to 2 points, depending on when you pick the number. Despite Caleb Sturgis missing 2 extra points and a field goal, what a bum.
Yeah, I loved every time he missed a kick, they would pan to Philip Rivers, and he looked like he wanted to murder somebody.
What's funny is I don't think Rivers swears, but it certainly looks like he does.
Yeah.
He's probably like, dadgummit, dadgummit.
Well, Caleb Sturgis is gone now. They have a new replacement. 6 kickers in the last 2 years, I think, for the Chargers now.
Oh, my God. That's horrible. One thing I would say that, you know, Wilson almost brought him back, and he had a chance. He threw a ball in the end zone. And, of course, they would have went for two. They could have tied that game that went awry. But it was an exciting game. And the Chargers are just with lockstep with the Chiefs, just one game back.
Yeah, that defense is picking up pace, too. And if Bosa comes back healthy at some point this year, they are going to get even better. And look out for these Chargers.
Yeah, I can't wait for that second round game when they're back together in Arrowhead this time when they play again. Mm-hmm. So, all right, well, let's go into the mailbag. It looks like we have some good questions this week. There were big public line moves after the injuries or the rest of this week. Thursday night started with the news that C.J. Beathard would be out for San Francisco, and the line moved from Oakland +2 all the way down through the zero where Oakland was favored -2. We know what happened. Nick Mullins happened, guy.
Yeah, that was incredible theatrics. All week, it looked like Oakland Raiders were going to be the sharp side, too. Mm-hmm. I think it even opened at 4 or 4.5.
Wow.
And traveled all the way down to 2.5 by Thursday morning. And then C.J. Beathard got ruled out just before game time, and a wave of money came in on the Oakland Raiders. And mm-hmm. we talked about this in shows past, but I think it goes to show that it sometimes does not pay off to follow those big moves when you hear about injury news or suspensions
right.
or star players. Not that Beathard is a star.
Right.
but those injuries and line moves may not always be the right play to make.
Yeah, in this case, I've heard a lot of news about this Mullins guy who played at Southern Miss. I guess he's friends with Brett Favre as the same agent or something, where he was last year, he would put Bose, he had Bose headphones on. He wouldn't actually be at the game. He'd go to a field nearby, near his home, and he'd put crowd noise into his headphones, and he'd play out all the plays so he'd be ready for the big game. And apparently he was on Thursday night. So,
although it must be stated that the Oakland Raiders were horrible on Thursday night. There were so many wide open wide receivers. Pierre Garçon had no one within 20 yards of him when Mullins hit him for that touchdown.
Yep. So, first touchdown in 2 years.
That Oakland Raiders defense is a mess, and really the whole team seems to have given up.
Yeah, I can understand why. They're just selling off all their assets. So we'll see what happens. All right, let's look at this second question.
Similarly, in the NBA, I wanted to add on Sunday night, there was another injury. Kawhi Leonard was ruled out, and quickly you saw the line against the LA Lakers move from Toronto minus two, 4 points all the way through to LA Lakers minus two. Again, public bettors thinking that, okay, the star Kawhi Leonard is out. They're going against LeBron James and the Lakers, and of course, LA has to cover, right?
Yeah,
nope. No. Toronto won the game 121-107. So again, just hammers home that point that you can't forget about your ratings and how good a team is even without their star player.
Yeah, it's a team game, and in this particular case, the Lakers are really struggling anyway. I don't know who's going to pick those guys unless you get a lot of points. And with Kawhi out, I mean, that team's actually pretty good without him, so I'm glad that they held that serve. And maybe it was just public money moving that number instead of the sharps.
Absolutely.
All right, well, let's take a look at college football this week. Getting way deep into the season now, some big matchups. As you stated before, Side Action had another huge day. We were 8-1 on the podcast picks. That's like 15-2 in 2 weeks.
That's pretty hot, definitely. And I think it has something to do with all of this data just coming in. All of the yards per play metrics and the offensive and defensive metrics and looking at these matchups later on in the season just gives us so much more information that we can pick from.
Yeah, and I think we also trust certain teams, right? So we'll talk about it in a minute, you know, about Utah State, but there's certain teams that, hey, they have a track record of covering the number. I mean, you can trust those teams. And in my case, I basically put that in. Just I didn't have to look at too many metrics. I knew that this team was going to be good for me. And as we talked about, they were that get-out game. So Bama, you know, they're the first team that we talked about. You know, they've been covering that first half spread every single week. They went in against LSU at LSU. It was a big game. We were watching that game at Rinaldi's, and I know your roommate was down there. And so their first half spread was minus nine, and what do you know? They covered that, and they covered the game spread at 14, up to 14.5 by winning 29-0.
Yeah, I was impressed by Alabama's defense. I really thought that LSU might be able to move the ball on them and even get a touchdown or two through Joe Burrow and the offense, but Bama really showed up and stopped them cold. They put on quite a performance.
They definitely decided to just put the game in Joe Burrow's hands. They just stuffed that running game, and that's kind of where the difference between an Alabama or some of these more sophisticated offenses, you can see that LSU is stuck in the 1960s, 1970s, just kind of ground and pound, and that'll work against certain teams. But you've got NFL-level talent on Bama's line, and they couldn't break that line. It was kind of one of those games where it was close enough early where you thought LSU had a chance, but as it went into the third quarter and they scored more and more points, the LSU team couldn't hold up against that offense. You got a big game coming up against Mississippi State now for Bama. We'll talk about that in the head-to-head. Right now that Bama's laying the 26 points. One of the ones we were cheering and high-fiving about, West Virginia at Texas. Texas was 2-point favorites at the time. And we were just watching this game. It was going back and forth. Wasn't a lot of defense out there. And then late in the game, Will Grier took his team, you know, under 2 minutes, 30 seconds, all the way down for a touchdown to pull within one. And we were super excited because they went for two.
Yeah, I remember you and I were saying, come on, Holgorsen, go for two, because that obviously locked the game up for us, whether they make it or not. But how about that touchdown pass by Grier right before that, a 50-yard bomb, which they caught right in the back of the end zone?
He dropped it in the bucket. It was a beautiful throw. And then when they went for two, we were talking about it. I was like, they're going to run the ball. And they had called a couple timeouts and changed the play. And then Greer was the one who ran it in to win the game outright. They still have a very small chance to make the playoff. It's probably not likely, but I wouldn't mind seeing those guys make it in there.
Mm-hmm. Also very interesting to note that the whole handicap surrounded around Tom Herman being mm-hmm. the favorite in the game. And wouldn't you know it, by kickoff, it flipped and Texas was actually the underdog. Yeah. I was a little bit worried about the line move, but that's okay. Tom Herman still lost like we expected.
Yeah, to me, it was the number that we had. It was a favorite when we picked it, but he flipped over.
There you go.
The game. Another big game, Michigan. They had a revenge game against Penn State. They were 10-point favorites going into that game. They completely dominated Penn State. I mean, in fact, that was kind of a statement win for the Wolverines.
Definitely. They came out and opened a can of whip ass mm-hmm. on Penn State. They started scoring and never looked back. In fact, I didn't think that Penn State would even get on the scoreboard. And
right.
Thankfully for them, they got a late touchdown to make it 42-7.
Yeah, James Franklin was looking a little bewildered over there on the sideline. And I hate to say it, but my khakis are looking pretty good here.
Yeah, they definitely are looking good to beat Ohio State. I wouldn't be surprised to see them open up as a favorite in that game, even on the road in Columbus, which would be shocking.
Yeah, let's see. If they can get through that hurdle, then I don't think the Big Ten title game is going to be that tough. Then they're going to make it into the Final Four, and we'll see what happens after that. Another big game that we kind of already referenced was the Georgia game that we covered before. Georgia wins, and more importantly, that basically sets them up for the big showdown against Bama in the SEC title game. Will be the one chance they can make it in.
Should be a great SEC title.
Absolutely. And then as referenced before, Utah State, they were playing at Hawaii. I think they kicked off at like 11:45 our time, and they win this matchup easily. They were 18-point favorites on the road, and they won 56-17. Utah State has only covered once all season.
Only lost against the spread once all
season.
Yeah,
that's what I meant, once against the spread.
That Hawaii team is just not the same as soon as their quarterback went down. Remember early on in the year how high-flying they were, and now they are just down in the doldrums.
That's right, that's right. Okay, let's talk about the S&P Plus moves. We've got UAB, which is a very good team. They're up 13 spots, up from 45 to 32. Cincinnati, another rough-and-tumble team. They're up 12 spots from 40 to 28. Minnesota, oh man, they lost to Illinois. They dropped 17 spots down to 76. Can you believe that? I can't believe that game.
No, Illinois is terrible and Minnesota might be worse.
I guess so. LSU takes a tumble down 9 spots from 13 to 22, obviously with the big loss. They go to Arkansas. They probably should get right there. They're 14-point favorites right there.
I actually like Arkansas in that game.
Do you?
Yeah, 13.5 right now, but I'm waiting to squeeze out the 14.
Yeah, I mean, LSU does have a trouble covering big numbers, but I don't know if I'd stay away from that personally.
It's a huge letdown spot after coming off the game against Alabama. Basically a dream crusher for the LSU Tigers. Now, their season is over. They have no chance to make it to the championship or the college football playoff.
That's true. That's true. And then Florida is also down 9 spots from 18 to 27. They got trounced by Mizzou. Mizzou looked pretty good in that game.
Yeah, huge, huge letdown for Florida there.
And then one of my new darlings is Fresno State. They're number 7 in the S&P Plus. They have a huge showdown at Boise this week. We'll talk about that in a minute. So now that leaves our top 5 with Alabama, Clemson, Michigan, Oklahoma, and Georgia. It pretty much mirrors the BCS standings almost for the most part, except for Notre Dame not being in there.
Mm-hmm.
So what spots you in this week action for week 11 in college football?
Going back to the well with Washington State at Colorado. Right now it's Wazoo -6. And this is mostly about fading Colorado. They opened the year 5-0 and have lost 4 in a row now. Wazoo, on the other hand, have won 5 in a row, and they have a huge significant edge in the offensive side of the ball here. They rank 7th in finishing drives, averaging 5.5 points per opportunity, and Colorado is 91st on defense finishing drives, and they allow 4.8 points per opportunity. So Wazoo is going to make some hay in the passing game. They have a superior passing offense, and the Colorado Buffaloes are poor on pass defense. So that's my handicap going with Washington State here.
I mean, Wazoo's been great for us. The Cougs have covered all but, I think, twice this year. So I can definitely see that happening. And anytime the Buffs are going to go down, you know, as a Rams fan, I'm good to see that.
There you go.
Our next game is Fresno State, huh? We're both on this one. Mm-hmm. You know, they're favored by 3 points on the road on the Smurf turf. I like it. I like it a lot. I know that Boise State has kind of been the team that's controlled the Mountain West for years, but Fresno is legit. They're number 7 in the S&P. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I know that Fresno definitely is deficient in the strength of schedule metric. Mm-hmm. Boise has a little bit higher strength of schedule. I think the only real team that Fresno has played is Minnesota,
right,
a game which they lost earlier in the season.
They did.
But Fresno has the edge in the offensive passing situations and on their defensive side of the ball. They have a net yards per play advantage of 1.9 to 0.6 for Boise. Mm-hmm. And Fresno is going to be able to stop that Boise passing attack. Ripon's kid, I think, is the quarterback. Mm-hmm. But Fresno has the 7th ranked passing defense compared to 83rd for Boise. So there's a significant edge there. And I expect that Fresno should be able to cover this field goal even on the road.
Yeah, field goal's nothing. This team's really good. We really think that, to me, it's going to come down to Fresno and the Aggies, Utah State at some point in this conference. So I agree with you on this handicap for sure. You like Duke, 10.5-point favorites over North Carolina. This isn't a basketball one, by the way.
No, Duke has a football team, too. Already bowl eligible, and this one's all about Duke's defense, mm-hmm, versus the poor North Carolina offense. They're 33rd in defensive success rate, and UNC is 105th in offensive success rate.
Okay.
I expect that Duke is going to hold them down, and S&P Plus has this as a 16-point margin, and right now you can get Duke minus 10.5.
Duke had a big, impressive win at Miami last week in that swamp. It was just pouring, torrential downpour. So I like this pick, too. All right, Utah. They're hosting Oregon, right?
Yep.
Okay, mm-hmm. They're only a 3.5-point favorite. I think this is a huge mistake in the odds makers. I agree. In our S&P Plus alone, they're 35 slots apart. Utah's definitely the better team. I kind of made up this spread of minus 7 points. I don't know if you could check that off your S&P numbers, but mm-hmm, to me, I definitely think this number should be higher. So if I can get Utah at a lower number, I'm going to take them. What do you say, Action?
Well, a similar theme here this week. We're going with the superior defense in the Utah Utes. Mm-hmm. They're ranked 26th in the S&P Plus defensively, and Oregon's all the way down at 82. Mm-hmm. The Utah Utes have a significant edge in the ground attack. Their running back, Zach Moss, should be able to get some yards against them. They have a 20th ranked rushing offensive attack that goes up against Oregon's 89th ranked defensive rushing attack. They have the motivational edge here. There are three teams tied in the Pac-12 South at 4-3, mm-hmm, including Arizona and USC. So Utah needs to win this game, and I expect they will comfortably.
Yeah, I think so too. I think they're definitely the better team, and they're at home. All right, let's go back to the Big Ten. Wisconsin on the road at Penn State. Penn State coming off that trouncing. Wisconsin's an 8-point dog in this game, getting those points. What do you think about this game?
I like Wisconsin here, but I will caveat that by saying I'm going to be watching the status of Alex Hornibrook. Mm-hmm. He got another concussion late in the game against Rutgers this past weekend, and they will have success in the passing game against Penn State's defense, but if Hornibrook is out, I'm probably going to be staying away. Add that into the fact that Penn State has now lost 2 in the Big Ten, and their dreams are crushed too.
Yeah.
So they don't really have a lot to play for here outside of just their own will. but I do expect that Wisconsin can keep this close.
And Wisconsin still has a shot at the Big Ten West, mm-hmm, right?
That's true.
So I think that Penn State's, to me, they're going to fold up their tents here and they're going to go down. Wisconsin and Penn State they're right next to each other in the S&P Plus. So these teams are basically on paper very similar. 8 points seems like a big number. So I agree with the analysis. And, you know, I think we'll see if Franklin can rally his troops, but I don't think he will. All right. You like another obscure one? We know Action loves these obscure matchups and they usually win. So Florida Atlantic, they're 19.5-point favorites at home versus Western Kentucky.
Yeah, this one is simply a fade of Western Kentucky. They're one of the worst teams in the nation, 112th in the S&P Plus. And Florida Atlantic has a not great but solid defense, and I think that they should be able to hold the Hilltoppers at bay. This one looks like it's about spot on with the line and the S&P metrics, but I think that the Owls should win by at least 3 touchdowns.
All right, go Owls. One of the ones that I put on here, and maybe you can give me some handicapping advice, is Texas Tech currently is at home. They're getting 1.5 points. They're hosting Texas. Texas obviously got beat on that last second play by Will Greer. But the key to this line to me right now, as you've noted, is that Alan Bowman, the quarterback of Texas Tech, was injured in a halftime warm-up something. So to me, that's why this line is here. Otherwise, Texas Tech would be favored, wouldn't they?
Yeah, I believe so. They have a superior offense, and Alan Bowman did come off around halftime against Oklahoma. They looked good against Oklahoma this past weekend.
Yeah, they did.
And even the backup came in and scored some touchdowns late in the second half. I do expect that they'll be able to keep this close, but like you said, if Alan Bowman's out, I'm probably going to be staying away.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, obviously, Texas Tech did cover against Oklahoma. They kept it close enough for the cover. And to me, you know, Texas Tech on paper on the S&P Plus is better than Texas. Obviously, we'll have to test that theory if Bowman's out, but I do like this game, too. I'm going to look at that for betting purposes.
And Tom Herman's a favorite there. So
exactly. We know that. Fade Tom Herman favorites. The last game that I like is also in the Big 12. Iowa State, the Cyclones, they're hosting Baylor. They're 14.5-point favorites. The Cyclones are red hot right now. They've covered their last three contests. They're just a really good team, and they're plus 50 in the S&P metrics. So in terms of the rankings, I really like Iowa State. I think they're peaking basically at the right time in the season.
Yeah, their quarterback Brock Purdy has been hot, hot, hot. Mm-hmm. And they should be able to run and score all day against Baylor.
Okay, looks like they've released the national championship.
Yeah, a couple of national championship look-ahead lines were posted on Sunday. As I was sitting around waiting for the Week 11 spreads to pop up, I noticed these come across the board. And interested to note that Alabama would be 9-point favorites against Clemson.
I did see that.
Mm-hmm. Alabama minus 20.5 against Notre Dame. And the final one, which I like and I already bet on, actually, is Alabama minus 14 against Michigan.
Okay.
Here's my theory. Michigan, if they make the playoff, which I expect they will, will have to run the table the rest of the way against the Big Ten, go to Columbus and beat Ohio State, then likely play a down opponent in the Big Ten championship, either Northwestern, Purdue, or Iowa, or Wisconsin, perhaps. But they are going to be rolling off of a completely running the table after their one loss against Notre Dame.
Correct.
And I think that this number may come down a little bit if they eventually do make it to the national championship. Add into that a semifinal victory, and Clemson. Michigan will probably have some higher value. So 14 points, I'm taking the value there.
I think that's a good angle. I mean, plus Michigan plays great defense. So that game may be kind of like an LSU-type game, except I think they have better quarterback play. There's no Joe Burrow in Michigan. And they just have a little bit better offense than some of these other teams that don't play any, you know, that play great defense. So that's a good idea, Action. All right, let's take a look at the NFL Week 10. Let's look at the yards per play metrics like we do every week. We have a new leader. We have the LA Chargers at 1.3 net yards per play. They're number one. The Rams are still up there at 0.9 despite the loss to the Saints. Kansas City at 0.9. You got Pittsburgh at 0.8. And then you got a three-way tie with Green Bay, Minnesota, and Chicago. Look at that. It's the NFC North, all at 0.5. Does any of that surprise you?
The Chargers surprised me a little bit. They increased their metrics again, even playing that stingy Seattle defense this weekend. And they're looking good. Obviously, the defense is improving too.
Yeah, I was putting down some numbers about Philip Rivers that I'll put out my fantasy blog post. He is just rolling, and he's got 2,200 yards. He's got 19 touchdowns. He only got 3 interceptions. He's on pace for more touchdowns and basically lowest interceptions of his career. He's playing great football, and that defense still doesn't have Joey Bosa. So, like we mentioned, they're a hot team, and we'll see how they do. Well, they get to play the Raiders this week.
Oh, that should be ugly.
Numbers should go up. The bottom five teams in this metric are Buffalo at minus 1.1, shocker. Oakland minus 1.1, dope. Arizona minus 1, Cleveland minus 1, and Tennessee minus 0.7 despite the win on Monday night. That's awful.
Yeah, these three teams at the bottom I have bet on over and over again, and I've sworn them off now. I need to learn from my past mistakes and never touch them again.
Yeah, but you thought that Buffalo win over Minnesota would come back at some point, right?
Mm-hmm.
In my little index, the NFL index, it did well again. If I picked against with the index alone, it was 61.54% or 8 out of 13 straight up and against the spread this week. I don't know why I don't follow it every week. for our pools. The top five in the index are the Rams still at number one, Bears at two, the Panthers jump in at number three, Patriots at four, and then I also have a three-way tie with the Chargers, Chiefs, and Ravens in fifth place. And the Saints are at 12th, and I've wanted to look at this because we've talked about how does this work. The Saints do give up a lot of yards and a lot of points. One thing the index doesn't account for is strength of schedule, which is probably something that needs to be considered, especially with the Saints. But I expect that the Saints, as their schedule probably gets a little bit easier, that they'll move up the ranks in the index as well. Let's look at some notable injuries. It looks like A.J. Green's going to miss the next couple weeks for the Bengals. That's key. They're going to play the Saints this week actually at home, so that's a big note. The Packers secondary was just destroyed on Sunday night. It seemed like they were carting guys off left and right.
Yeah, they could have used Ha-Ha Clinton Dix in there on Sunday night.
Oh, my gosh. And Blake Martinez also got hurt as a linebacker.
That's true.
The whole Redskins offensive line, you've got, you put four or five starters missing, huh?
Yeah, four out of five. Trent Williams was already missing, and during the game, they lost both starting guards, Brandon Scherff and Sean Luavo, and both did not return and have since been put on IR for the rest of the season. They also lost their right tackle, Morgan Moses, went down during the game, although he did later return. Adrian Peterson got held in check, and as soon as that happened, I was logging in and live betting on the Falcons because offensive line injuries are no joke, and when right. you have more than one in a cluster like that, there's just no way that a team can hold up. I'm already eyeing to fade them the rest of the year.
Yeah, it's probably a smart move. I mean, they had that good run early. The defense is still pretty good, but yeah, that was the key, the running game. So, all right, so you've got Sony Michel and Gronk are still sidelined for the Patriots. It doesn't seem to matter to these guys, mm-hmm. but Josh Gordon played well in absence as well as Cordarrelle Patterson. And then the Browns, yeah, they had a key secondary injury. Denzel Ward, the rookie who's played outstanding, he's actually hurt, probably missed this game. That's going to make a difference.
Yeah. As soon as he went down on Sunday, they had no chance against the Chiefs.
Exactly. So what spots are you eyeing in the NFL action?
Well, as formerly noted, I'm going to be fading Washington. I jumped on Tampa Bay at -2.5. Obviously, Fitzpatrick was not the world beater that we saw in the first couple of weeks. He did have a couple of interceptions on Sunday. But again, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers came back in the second half. Their offense is certainly explosive, and they can stay in any game. I will also note that they have a surprisingly good defensive line, which, as noted, the Redskins' offensive line is in shambles right now.
Right.
That Buccaneers defensive line is fourth in adjusted line yards at 3.59. And again, Adrian Peterson likely to be bottled up this week. I'll add in that Chris Thompson is hurt, so yep. they don't have that electric back out of the backfield. This all adds up to a play on Tampa Bay.
Yeah, Paul Richardson's on IR. I think Jordan Reed is on the injury report with a questionable neck injury. Crowder may play. It's a mess. So originally, I was going to fight you on this one on the head-to-head, but when I heard all these injuries, I had to fade them as well. So
yeah.
Good pick with Tampa.
How about you? Anything you like?
Yeah, I like Seattle going to the Rams. They're getting 10 points. They played earlier in the year, and it was a dogfight. Seattle's a very good team, definitely a good defensive team. I think they can slow down Gurley on the ground and basically make Goff beat them. I just think the 10 points is too much here. The Rams have also been giving up a lot of points. Even in their wins, they've been giving up yardage and points. So I definitely like Seattle plus the 10.
I concur. Russell Wilson should be able to make some hay in the passing game against that Rams secondary too. Marcus Peters is beatable. He takes a lot of chances. And if there's any quarterback in the league that's set up to take advantage of that, it's him, as well as Drew Brees, obviously.
Nice. Another spot that I kind of like, although I saw him play last night, is the Cowboys. They're getting 6.5 at Philly. The Eagles are off the bye, but I think the Dallas defense is really good. My index actually puts these teams as even though they're going to be at Philly. So 6.5 is just too many points. I think it should be closer to like 3.5 or 3 points. Have any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think I'm going to go against you on this one. We'll talk about it later.
We'll see how it goes. I was originally going to put this one in, and I can't do it, but let's talk about it anyway. The Bills are getting 7.5 points to the Jets. The Jets stink. The Bills stink. Peterman's going to start again, but Darnold stinks too. Any thoughts on this game?
Garbage.
Fade it.
I'm going to put it on the corner of my screen and not watch.
Yeah, the index says pick the Bills. I don't know if I can do it. I just don't have the stomach for it.
I should add, though, honestly, Sam Darnold played horribly Sunday. I really liked the Jets down in Miami, and he threw four interceptions, and somehow they stayed in the game throughout, and they only lost by seven, and he threw four picks. So
yeah, he's bad. Here's what I'm going to say. I've heard the stat this week. Apparently, the Bills have only scored one offensive touchdown since Josh Allen has been out.
Mm-hmm.
Yet the offense has given up three defensive scores with Allen out. So Peterman is garbage. I can't believe they don't pick up somebody off the street. There's got to be somebody better than this guy. I mean, Nick Mullins started.
Well, they tried. Derek Anderson, and then he got concussed.
He did get concussed. So I guess it's a stay away. The last game I actually like, and I like it quite a bit, is, you know, we've talked about the Chargers quite a bit today. They're 10-point favorites at home against the Raiders. The Raiders are done. We've talked about a dumpster fire. They're terrible, whatever word you want to use. The Chargers have the largest differential in my index. This should be a bigger spread. I don't know why it isn't, so I would jump on this number early. I'd expect it to go up over the course of the week.
Without a doubt. I can't believe that the odds makers didn't open this one higher. It should be 14, 15, 16 range.
Exactly.
One other that I would like to add is the Jacksonville Jaguars coming off the bye. Coming back from London, the whole world is against them, and they're on the road in a divisional game at Indianapolis this weekend, catching a full field goal.
Mm-hmm.
I understand that Jacksonville has not played well significantly. Blake Bortles has not played well.
That's right.
But I really think that this team is going to take some momentum there and take this view of us against the world. Everyone in the media is downplaying them and writing them off this season, but I think that they can come in and cover that 3 points in Indianapolis.
Well, they're supposed to get Fournette back. He's kind of the key to that team.
Mm-hmm.
The bottom line is they don't turn the ball over. They win games. They just haven't been able to do that. The defense metrically is really good. They're number one against the pass. They just got to make sure Bortles doesn't give the other team the ball in the 20.
That's right.
So it's not a bad take. For a Survivor segment, I just kind of covered a few quick ones we've already talked about. The Chargers over the Raiders at 10-point favorites at home. The Chiefs get the Cardinals at home. They're 16.5-point favorites. And the Packers at home against the Dolphins with 10-point favorites. So, if you're still alive.
Yeah, all those teams might be selected already by some teams. So, I'll add that I think Tampa Bay is a sneaky play here, too, at home against the Redskins.
I gotcha. All right, let's go into the head-to-head segment. I've been getting walloped the last couple weeks, but let's see if you can come all the way back here. The first pick is Kentucky. They are 6-point favorites at Tennessee. The total is 42.5. I will say that Kentucky, they've been such a good team this year. I want to see them finish strong. The only reason why I want to take Kentucky in this set is that Tennessee is terrible.
Yeah, Tennessee is not good. They barely beat Charlotte last weekend. 14-3 was the final. But my angle here is Kentucky coming off the dream crusher.
Let down.
They had high hopes on the SEC championship game and even the college football playoff. And they just got crushed by the Georgia Bulldogs last weekend. And it's going to be hard for them to get up for this road game. They're going to Tallahassee. And this is a bad offense. And they're laying 6 points on the road. I'll gladly take six with Tennessee.
All right. I think you meant Knoxville, but yes.
Yes, sorry, Knoxville.
That's all right. Yeah, of course. We'll see what happens. All right, the next game we are going to pick here is Mississippi State. They're going to Alabama. Alabama is favored by 25.5 on our grade here. The total is 52. What say you, Action?
I'm going to be taking Mississippi State here again, fading the Alabama Crimson Tide coming off the big game last weekend. The difference here is that I think that this Mississippi State team should be able to move the ball again a little bit against the Alabama defense.
Okay.
And 25.5 is a very large number for conference game, and I think that the Bulldogs can cover it.
Yeah, I mean, metrically, Mississippi State is not that bad. I mean, they're number 11 in the index, S&P Plus, but I just still have memories of that game against LSU where Mississippi State could not do anything. So I'm not sure they're going to move the ball on this Alabama team. I do think the letdown spot is possible, like you said, after the big game. 25.5, it's a big number, but roll tide. All right, let's move to the NFL. Two picks. We've already talked about it. Dallas, I'm on Dallas at Philadelphia. Dallas is getting 6.5. You're against me there. So what's your rationale there?
Well, the Eagles are coming off of a bye, and they've been quite a bit banged up. I think that the quarterback, Carson Wentz, is going to be even more healthy than he was 2 weeks prior. And the Eagles are still the Super Bowl champs.
Yeah.
And I, like you, watched Dallas fade last night. They looked horrible. And the clapper on the sideline had no idea what he was doing.
As they say in VSiN, all he does is spit and clap. I hate him. Yeah, he's got to be fired this year, please.
I can't believe that Jerry Jones came out today and gave him backing and said that he was going to keep him around.
He just likes a yes man around. He'll never win a title with a guy like that.
And something's wrong with Dak Prescott. He just hasn't looked like his normal self lately, and he can't make completions, and they're not using him in the running game like they should be.
Right.
It's just bad game plans, and I think that Philadelphia will carry this game.
Yeah, my biggest thing is that Dallas's defense is really good. I liked what they did last night. Did he get worn down? And 6.5 is a big number. You can see the totals at 43. Nobody's expecting this to be a shootout, so Dallas should be able to keep it close, but I hear your rationale. In our last game, it's Carolina at Pittsburgh. This is the Thursday night special. Pittsburgh, they're 4-point favorites at home. The total is 51.5. I like Pittsburgh. They are playing good football now. They've decided to do what they need to do is use James Conner as Le'Veon Bell. He's going off every game. The offense is diversified, and more importantly, the defense is playing much better. Carolina is a great team. They're number 3 in my index. The only thing is, I think that sometimes they have letdowns. I'm looking for a letdown here on the short week.
Carolina is certainly a much better team when they're playing at home, but this team has been phenomenal lately. Mm-hmm. Cam Newton's on fire, and they're running the ball through McCaffrey. They're getting him involved in the passing game, and those receivers are getting separation, DJ Moore and Devin Funchess.
And Curtis Samuel had 2 touchdowns.
And Curtis Samuel. This game opened up at 6 or 7 in some spots, and it's already been bet down to 4. Mm-hmm. But both teams coming off of a short week. Also, these Pittsburgh and Baltimore games are always very physical.
True.
They take a huge toll on both teams. So I think that Pittsburgh is going to have a hard time covering this 4, and I think that Carolina could even win this game outright.
Oh, is that a money line bet?
I may dabble a little on the Panthers.
Yeah, that probably would be a good money line bet for you. All right, well, let's jump ahead to what everybody wanted to talk about here, especially action here. The College Hoops Preview, as we talked about tonight, there's some big games. Michigan State's playing Kansas, and Kentucky's playing Duke. Mm-hmm. That should be some great matchups. There's also Nevada's playing BYU, so there's a lot of big games in the early in the season here. Let's run down the championship odds that we have. We have Duke at 4-1, Kansas at 6-1. Kentucky also at 6-1, North Carolina 8-1, the Zags at 10-1, Virginia at 12-1, Nevada at 12-1, Oregon at 20-1, Villanova at 25-1, and you finally see a Big Ten team, Michigan State at 25-1, Tennessee at 25-1, Indiana at 30-1, and I'm going to stop at Michigan at 40-1. What do you like out of this group so far?
Well, I was scanning looking for Maryland, Baltimore County, and I don't see them.
They should be in there. They should at least be 3-1, right? They were great last year in that one game.
No, I think there's some value here in a couple of these teams that have a lot of returning starters mm-hmm. and some serious experience. The one that I picked out was the Nevada Wolfpack.
Yep.
They're returning nearly all of their starters. Lindsey Drew is coming off of that Achilles injury, mm-hmm. which could be take him a little time to get back. But I like Nevada at 12-1. I also think that there's some sleepers down the list here too. I think you mentioned Tennessee yep. at 25-1. They have a very experienced team too. Even though Rick Barnes is their coach, he hasn't done much in the NCAA tournament. But that you have Michigan State too, which I think could be a dark horse.
Yeah, on this list, I agree with you. Nevada is going to be a very good team. I do like them to go deep in the tournament. Musselman's a great coach. He coaches an NBA style, which translates to players on the court. He's got those Martins. They're both probably NBA level players. Coraline as well. I do like Gonzaga at 10-1. Early in the season, they're going to have miss one of their better players with Tilly. He's out mm-hmm. for at least a month. But when he comes back, they're going to be a force. You know that they dominate the WCC out there. A team further down that I kind of like is Oregon at 20-1. Dane Altman's a great coach. He has a really good recruiting class this year. As you can see, there's not a lot of Pac-12 teams on this list so far. So if they can roll into the tournament, you know, get a top seed and maybe host in the West, that might be really beneficial. Yeah, but at the top, I mean, it really does start at the top. Duke, Kansas, Kentucky. I don't know about North Carolina. I don't know their team as well, but those top three teams are definitely the blue bloods.
Yeah, certainly they have the best chances to win this tournament, and obviously it shows in their preseason odds here, but I really don't think there's much value in making any bets on these teams.
Right.
The way that you're going to squeeze value out of these futures picks is by finding somebody a little bit lower down the list in that 20 to 40 range. So whatever you may choose, best of luck to you, but I'm personally going to be making a futures bet on Nevada, 12-1.
Great. Who would you have in your Final Four then?
My Final Four predictions for this year are a little bit chalky, but I'm going to go with Kentucky. Again, we talked about experience. This is actually one of the most experienced teams that Calipari has had at Kentucky.
Yeah.
They have the transfer from Stanford, Reed Travis, mm-hmm. in the center, and then couple that with a couple of returning players as well, as including their typical freshman recruiting class. And this team is going to be good down the stretch. They play in the tough SEC too, which will give them
really
some good
now.
Games.
Mm-hmm.
And I've got Kentucky, Michigan State. Tom Izzo has got a good returning crew as well. They're going to be shooting the lights out. Kansas is the number one team in the nation for good reason.
They're great.
And Nevada is my fourth team in the Final Four for this year.
And then your champ?
The Kansas Jayhawks.
Wow, you trust Bill Self, huh?
Number one, wire to wire. That's my prediction, although I will be betting on Nevada, so hopefully I can get some value out of those.
I read a little bit about Bill Self, that this may be his last year at Kansas. I heard something that he's 57 or something. He wants to be out of the game by 60, and so there's speculation because of maybe some of these investigations that he could try to get out ahead of that and maybe go to the NBA next year. This is pure speculation. I read an article on ESPN, but maybe he'll go out on top, like you said here. In my Final Four, I'm going to fade Kansas out of this. I don't trust Bill Self. I think he's a really good coach for recruiting and definitely in his league. I mean, he's won the Big 12 every year for years, but come the tournament, I don't like him. Duke, I think they're the team that, with this young group, I mean, Zion Williamson is an NBA player now.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to have the best talent every night. It's whether they can win. Kentucky, I agree with you. They have that depth and they have also that experience. I like Gonzaga this year to make it to the Final Four. I'll always be rooting for Mark Few. I think he's a great guy, runs a great program, and I just like the Zags. And then I also have Nevada in the Final Four, kind of my little, you know, Cinderella story. I have Duke as the champion. I think they're the most talented team out there, despite Kansas's roster, which I've heard has top to bottom, just kind of a good mesh. I think eventually Coach K will have this group playing at the elite level they need to be to win the title. And I don't like that, by the way. Ridgeway, that's for you, but you know, this is just purely on betting purposes, right?
Well, Coach K definitely knows how to coach in the tournament, and he's won plenty of them. So.
That's right. So what about some early angles when we talk about betting college versus, you know, pro or even, you know, college football or something? What do we look at for – what do you think we should look at?
Well, I love betting early on in the season, but – as we mentioned in other podcasts, I do like to take somewhat of a wait and see approach on a lot of these teams, mm-hmm. specifically when you're talking about sides. What I do like to target early on are totals, and it's hard for these handicappers to set lines on these totals without having any data to back them up on these teams.
Right.
Just like the NBA, the referees have a renewed focus every season on the freedom of movement,
mm-hmm.
and that results in a lot of whistles early on. So I'll be looking to target some totals that I think are in the low range or teams that have really good offenses and don't play much defense, Duke and Kentucky tonight.
Sure.
And also, these total bets usually have a lot lower bet counts, which makes it even more difficult on odds makers because they have a difficult time moving the lines quick enough,
mm-hmm.
and you can find some oddballs out there and get some real value.
Okay, that's a good tip. You also made a note about big favorites against cupcakes. So when they're 25 or 30-point favorites, how does that affect your betting?
I do like to target big favorites as well, especially playing at home, and couple that with teams that have good, solid defenses. They usually do a good job of holding down these opponents that are ranking in the bottom of the 300 Division I teams.
Mm-hmm.
And those 25 to 27-point spreads are usually pretty easy to cover for the top teams.
Hmm. just something you got to get used to. It's a little different than other sports, I guess. Mm-hmm. And then you also note that you fade the public in high profile and highly bet games. So the old adage of fading the public holds true in college basketball. What do you mean by that?
Yeah, more so than other sports, there is all these very public teams mm-hmm. in college basketball. True. And the bet counts are obviously much lower than they are in the NFL or even college football. So you can find some value in there by looking at the bet percentages on some of the applications that we've talked about,
okay.
where you see a team that might be getting 80% of the bets or, mm-hmm. or even 70, 75, and going against the public in a lot of these cases turns out to be really profitable over the long haul.
Interesting. Okay. One of the things that I heard about on VSiN is that some of the offshore books like we use, they actually have conference win totals posted already. And it's actually early in the season. You know, usually, like you said, you want to see how things work out. But you may see some of these teams and you can get a value on some of these conference win totals now because Vegas might not set those win totals till closer to the conference season begins.
That's very interesting. I've never seen conference win totals before, but would love to check them out.
Nice. Well, you've got a couple other notes here, and I do too. Why don't you talk about one of the Illinois local teams that you apparently like quite a bit?
Yeah, a couple teams that I'm going to be targeting throughout the season include the Illinois State Redbirds.
Mm-hmm.
They had a great season last year and just narrowly missed out on the NCAA tournament, but they are returning a number of their scorers, the top three, in fact, and senior Malik Yarborough, Phil Fain and Keyshawn Evans are all returning for the Redbirds, and they're going to be a tough team in the Missouri Valley.
Yeah, those are one of those teams that you, in those smaller mid-major conferences that are returning a lot of players, those are the ones that are dangerous. They usually win their conference tournament game, and they can make hay in the tournament. So I like that.
Yeah, we already talked about Nevada. Mm-hmm. Definitely going to be looking at a lot of their games, although I expect they're probably going to be favorites in every regular season game they play.
Yeah, pretty much.
I'll be looking to pick up spots for them, too. How about you? Any bet on teams?
Well, I've talked about the Zags already. I do believe early in the season with Tilly out, they actually could be a target. They might be overrated a little bit, especially in those kind of like big tournaments like Battle for Atlantis or wherever they're playing.
The holiday tournaments.
The holiday tournaments. But I would like to see, you know, how that affects them once they, you know, maybe they're down in metrics early, and that might affect how people are betting on them come, say, January or late December, January and February. So that's a team I'm going to look at. The other one is Virginia. We talked about here. What did you say? Maryland?
UMBC, Maryland, UMBC, Baltimore County.
That's right. You know, after
Golden
that
Retriever.
Tragic loss to the 16 seed, the first time ever. I do expect Virginia to come out and kind of blast teams, not just blow them out, but play their level of defense to complete boa constrictor level and hold people way under totals. So I'd be looking at Virginia opponent totals and see if I could bet on that. I don't know. That's one of my ideas.
Kyle Guy coming back this year as a Lawrence Central grad, just like myself. So
look at that.
I'm interested to see how he plays this season.
You have another note to fade a few teams, and I do have a note there too. So why don't you talk to me about your boy Sean Miller in Arizona?
Yeah, number one fade this year is going to be Arizona. They lost all five of their top scorers last season, and there is a huge dark cloud over Tucson this year.
There is.
In the name of an FBI investigation, and I just can't see how this team is going to focus week in and week out to play basketball games.
Mm-hmm.
They don't have a star-studded class that comes in. A couple of them actually defected once the news came out.
Can't blame them.
They're ranked 42 in some of the preseason rankings that I've seen here, but I expect that the odds makers will still have to shade their way because they're Arizona.
Sure.
So I think there's going to be significant value in looking to fade them week in, week out.
I like that. I like that idea. You've also listed the UCLA Bruins.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, similarly here, they had a couple of highly touted prospects that aren't going to be able to play this year in Sharif O'Neal and Tiger Campbell. And they were supposed to have a deep rotation, but it looks significantly reduced now. Mm. They do have another Indianapolis native, Chris Wilkes, who is a baller. But they still lack very freshman-oriented class, as some of the other blue bloods do. So I'm going to be looking to fade UCLA as well.
And that's another public team. People love UCLA, mm-hmm. so there's going to be maybe artificial stilting of those lines for that team. For me, it's the Big Ten. You know, I hate to say this, but the Big Ten's down. And, you know, let's see what happens when it gets into conference season. But I really don't see, outside of Michigan State, I know you like Indiana, they might be improved, but these aren't at the level of the other teams we reviewed. So when they face the ACC Big Ten Challenge or something like that, I'm going to look to fade Big Ten teams. They're going to take it. Let's see how the line makers make that. A lot of Big Ten bettors, like ourselves, we're in the Midwest, love our teams basically to a fault. I think that's a mistake. I think they actually, as a conference, are behind the ACC, the SEC, and Big 12 this year in terms of strength.
Yeah, I think there's no doubt about it. The SEC is going to be incredibly improved over years past. And obviously, the ACC is always up there. I should add, too, the Big East is going to be really good this year. Even outside of Villanova, a lot of those teams are going to be improved. St. John's comes to mind and some of the others there. So I agree with you. The Big Ten is probably down from where they are normally, but the top of the league is still going to be good. Michigan State, Michigan are going to be good.
Good I think coaching.
That Indiana and Purdue are right there in a second tier as well. And Nebraska supposed to be Nebraska. Much improved.
One of the teams I didn't note on here for our notes is that Louisville. Louisville might be a team that I'd like to watch. They almost made the tournament last year. Chris Mack is now the coach there.
Mm-hmm.
That's a big change. Obviously, they had a lot of turmoil last year. I wouldn't be surprised if that's a team that's on a surprise and that early in the season you can get some value on and early in the ACC regular season. All right. Well, that wraps up episode 11, and that was a long one, but we were excited about college basketball. And I want to thank everybody for following us and giving us our likes. And hopefully you guys are retweeting our tweets when we are making all these great picks for college. Pro hasn't been so great, but we've still been okay.
Yeah, really appreciate all you guys listening to us and all of the comments and feedback and the ratings that we're getting on iTunes. It's been a great journey, and we hope to keep it going. It's going to be a little bit difficult for us to pick up these college basketball games each week, but we're going to try and figure out how we can work in some picks here and there as well on the podcast.
Yeah, I think that's why it's important to follow us on Twitter because we're going to put out picks, and that's going to give you more real-time action that you can basically use that at, you know, right away and get in your apps to get your picks in. And then also just kind of the fundamentals. I mean, we'll talk about fundamentals of how to approach these games so that you can keep winning and increasing that bankroll. So definitely follow me personally at Wegspool on Twitter and the podcast at Side Action Pod on Twitter.
And you can follow me on Twitter at 31SRoberts.
All right. Well, that wraps it up for this week.
That's a wrap for this episode of the Side Action Podcast. We appreciate all of your listens and thank you for joining us. We'll see you all again next week on Thursday for some more hot picks and side action. Side Action Podcast, its owners and associates take no responsibility for the opinions or statements made by the show hosts or their guests. Statements or show topics are not necessarily the beliefs of this podcast, and opinions between talk show hosts may conflict. Individuals following the advice given on the podcast accept their own risk of losses from wagers made, as the Side Action Podcast, its owners, hosts, associates, or guests will not guarantee any advice given. The opinions and advice given on the Side Action Podcast is for entertainment purposes only. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Intro and outro and transition music credits. Song titles, Jerry 5 and District 4 by Kevin MacLeod at incompetech.org. Licensed under Creative Commons Attribution 3.0. creativecommons.org/licenses/by 3.0.